Howdy, one and all. This is Mike Siegel from Big Blue Interactive, and today, podcasting our second 2017 NFL Draftcast. And today, joining me are NFL draft experts Dave T. Thomas of NFLScouting.com, not only an avid Giants fan, but a Brooklyn boy to boot, and Cy56, a regular BBI contributor. Cy scouts roughly 500 players a year and works with OurLads.com. Welcome to you both, and thanks for joining us to talk about issues surrounding the Giants and the NFL as we brace ourselves for the upcoming NFL draft. Cy, I don't know about you, but unlike Dave T., this is only my second podcast. I hope you enjoy chatting with us like this. Is draft time very special for you after a year of preparation and 500 scouting reports?
Absolutely. You know, this is something, it's almost like Christmas. You know, you work pretty much from, for me anyway, I work from like June up until now, just getting as much information as possible on these guys and just being able to actually have like a credible opinion. And it's almost like Christmas morning. You know, you almost can't sleep these next few nights. You're just so excited.
Dave, it's hard to know what the heck is going to happen starting tomorrow, but one thing's for sure, it's a lot easier to predict the ninth draft pick than the 23rd, isn't it?
Well, you know, especially around this time, I love this week because you find more liars out in the NFL than you find at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. this morning alone, I tell you, I think that by the time this is all over with, AT&T is going to send me some shares of stock because my phone has been ringing. The biggest thing is going to be the impact of the bad boys. And the NFL only has themselves to blame for this, and I'll get into it in detail later on in the show.
Hey, guys, can you believe it? It's Wednesday, April 26, 2017, and tomorrow is the start of the NFL draft. Everything seems so much up in the air this year, and I'm all a flutter right now. Dave, tell us about the final moments of teams getting ready for the draft. What is it like in the war room? What are they doing? What are the issues at hand right now?
Well, obviously, there's two issues in hand right now. Every position coach is in the film room getting his last views in because when day three comes up, that's when it's going to be critical. Everybody says day one, day two, that's where you make or break. Day one or day two is the coordinators, the head coach, the general managers. They're going to make a decision. Those scouts are going to be sitting in that room like a bunch of mimes till day three comes up because that's when your scouts start earning their paychecks. I think that the big thing right now is what's going to happen on draft day. Everybody knows that Tennessee is about to pull this deal going down with Cleveland. Tennessee wants to move down. Tennessee wants to take Mike Williams at number 12 if they get that from Cleveland. But this is setting up a scenario where Cleveland is having second thoughts for the simple situation. They know that the Chargers want to jump on Williams too. Everybody's saying that Tennessee wants to go for Howard with their first pick, but no, brother, I think that tight end may end up sliding as far down as Denver before this is all over.
God, it just seems there are tons of rumors flying around right now. Are teams in as much of a panic as my fluttering stomach tells me?
Well, the whole thing comes, you know what that old saying is, the best laid plans of mice and men, and right now the mice are scurrying in their war room because they know that their men are going to have to make a check tomorrow, and that check's going to be a big one because on a first-round draft pick, you cannot blow it.
I hear that. Hey, there's so much contradictory information coming out. How much of it is misinformation that is being spread around?
Well, here's the thing. Like I say, you know, liar, liar, pants on fire. That's the tradition for this week. But how I judge everything going on, one, about my contacts. Two, about my scouts out on the field. Three, what I look at is if I got a team talking about Joe Blow, I want to see how much research that they've done. He was just a voice in his opinion. He wants the Giants to draft a Georgia Bulldog.
Where were we? You were talking about contradictory information
Yeah, you know, this a great way of trying to take away the liar, liar, pants on fire for the ones that are sincere out there. See, I'm on a different venue. I'm on a scouting venue. So if I'm hearing from a team all of a sudden they're looking for extra reports or more information on a player, I go over to my Twix system. If they're serious about the guy, they've accessed the Twix, they're pulling up his scouting reports, looking at the film breakdowns that we've done. If they're not interested in the guy, they're not going to sit in a film room for 6 to 8 hours looking at what the guy could do on the football field.
Cy, let's turn to you. What do you think this New York Giants team may be looking like in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. We all know, even though Eli Manning's faithful, we know that he's coming down to an end. You know, he's down to the twilight of his career. There's 3 years left on that contract. I think we'll see him played out. But he's 36 this season, and the backups are not future guys. You know, Josh Johnson, Geno Smith. So that's the first and foremost. You know, long-term future, you know, I think it starts to become starting to get a little unstable at that spot, you know. And, you know, you start looking what's up in front of him. You know, we all know the Giants' offensive line was among the worst in football last year. Their best offensive lineman, Justin Pugh, free agent next year. You know, common sense says let's bring him back, all right? But if you start looking at some of these contracts that guard's been getting the past few years, I mean, Zeitler just got $31.5 million guaranteed this past season from the Browns. You know, Betonio, $17 million guaranteed, six-year contract, $51 million. You know, David Castro, $50 million contract for 5 years, $16 million guaranteed. These are big, big numbers. So I think it's possible you're going to see someone like that lead in free agency. So now you're all of a sudden you're missing the best piece of a pretty bad offensive line. Now you start talking about the questions. Eric Flowers, is he a left tackle of the future? I don't think so. The right side of the offensive line, you know, John Jerry, DJ Fluker, Bobby Hart, these are all replacement caliber players. You know, I wouldn't call them, you know, starters in the NFL. I think they're starting by default here. You know, so then you look at the strongest part of the team, the cornerbacks. You know, you got Jenkins, you got last year's first-round pick, Eli Apple. They're locked up long-term. But how long is Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie going to be here? You know, he's 32 next year. His cap number next year is $8.5 million. If he gets passed by Eli Apple on the depth chart, is he worth that contract next season? So you're talking about some of the most influential positions in football, quarterback, the offensive line, and the cornerbacks. You know, I think you're looking long-term. It's a pretty shaky position. So, you know, as much as we want the draft to solve the Giants' issues next year, it's also very much about the long-term future, these next 3-4 seasons. And I think that it just kind of adds to the complexity of what the Giants are going to have to do this year.
Well, let me ask you, Cy, going in tomorrow's draft, what do you think the Giants' needs are?
I mean, I hate to say this, but the loss of Jonathan Hankins has to push the defensive tackle need up to the top of the board. I'm not saying they should use a first-round pick. I don't think there's going to be anyone there worth a first-rounder. But there's a pretty significant hole at that spot. You have Damon Harrison. We all know he's probably one of the top five defensive tackles in football right now. But there is no presence next to him. So, and you need two of them, right? We play the 4-3 defense. You know, you need two of them in there. And the fact that Hankins is no longer in the picture, I mean, you're talking about street free agent level players playing next to Harrison. And look at this division. You know, if you want to be back on top of the NFC East, you can't show up to Dallas against that offensive line without presence inside. So I think if you have to really consider the top need, you're looking at defensive tackle.
And me, I think that our defensive tackle, spend day one, spend day two elsewhere, because you come up in day three, you're going to be sitting on the board with Carlos Watkins still out there. You could probably grab him at the end of three. In the fourth round, you got Eddie Vanderdas at UCLA. But why, oh, why do I keep on seeing big blue scouts down at Albany State? This Grover Stewart is the second coming of big snacks. And then you got to look at the kid that's injured over at Toledo. If Trayvon Hester did not have the injury problem and still not being able to work out, this guy probably would have been a second or third round pick. Now you can steal a guy like that in round six.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about trying to fill a defensive tackle hole is you don't necessarily need one guy. You know, with the amount of rotations we see along defensive lines these days, and the amount of defensive ends that shift inside on passing down, you could go into the draft and say, we don't need an every down guy. We need a run stuffer. And then maybe later in the draft, we go after a pass rusher. You can fill this hole with a couple of different pieces. You know, you don't need to get all in one shot here.
Well, my biggest concern when I look at the Giants' personnel right now is, how could I put it, the vanilla offense? I mean, they used an 11 personnel package last year. Guys, we need variety out there. I can't eat vanilla. I got to go to Baskin Robbins, especially with my offensive scheme.
So, Cy, what is your forecast for? And who would realistically look good in blue this draft?
Well, I mean, if you're talking, you know, if we're going to stick with the defensive tackle theme, you know, I think you have a couple of guys that could – I like Montrevious Adams from Auburn, and we're talking day two here, obviously not first round. I also like Dalvin Tomlinson from Alabama. Carlos Watkins, like Dave said, you probably get him early day three. There's a name out there. I don't see him talked about probably enough. Chris Wormley from Michigan. He played left defensive end for the majority of the snaps for that defense. I think that was more by based on what they had on their roster. I think he was more of a defensive tackle that they shifted outside. Might not have the traditional D-tackle body, but the guy's 6'5", 300. He's long, incredible athlete, incredible leverage, doesn't get moved. And that kind of, like, reliable presence, maybe low ceiling but high floor type prospect, I think that's what fits in best with what the Giants need at D-tackle right now. And you might be able to get him in round two.
Well, I think Mr. Wormley might end up playing in Las Vegas in 2 years. Word that we got from Oakland the last couple of days. Wormley right now is a big for the Oakland Raiders. I think with the Marshawn Lynch deal going down today, it takes them out of the equation for a running back in the first 2 days of the draft. And you know, Oakland right now, they want to address their defensive efforts.
He would fit that scheme very well, Chris Wormley.
Of course, I look at the kid, though. Honestly, I wish New England would have had a pick at the end of round one because he's a perfect type to come in and play the Ty Warren role up there for New England. I think he's more of a 3-4 defensive end than I would like to see him as a 4-3 DT, though. The kid's got incredible speed, Si. I mean, that kid coming off the edge, it's like watching Stephen Tuitt down at Pittsburgh.
There's a lot to him. He can do a lot.
So I know you're high on Dalvin Cook, and Dave, you're not as high on Dalvin Cook. Can we get a little debate going here about the pros and cons of Dalvin Cook?
Well, my concern with Dalvin Cook is the nightlife in New York City. I mean, this kid, down in Florida, he's gotten in so much trouble. Imagine what he could do with the element over there, the strip clubs and everything else. The kid's got an entourage right now that is probably bigger than what Michael Jackson had. This concerns me. This concerns me with his off-field problems. Also, what concerns me is on the football field. He is a violent running back. I give him that much credit. But if you watch that guy, he runs pretty upright. And outside of Eddie George, you don't see too much success with running backs that run that erect like he does.
What do you like about him, Si?
I like the easy vision, easy burst, easy change of direction. I think he runs faster than he times, and I think he does it all. He puts a lot of effort in as a blocker. He catches everything that's thrown his way. And, you know, what I look for running backs, the two things I look for the most are vision and the ability to break tackles. And he did that all 3 years. I mean, you don't set ACC rushing records the way he did without being able to do a lot of different things, you know. And I actually think this was my most impressive year with him because the offensive line of Florida State this year was not what it's been in the past. And I think someone's going to get a major, major steal with him. I think he's a top 10 player in this draft.
Wow.
I think the next running back you're going to see wearing a big blue uniform is going to be coming down from New England. And you got to look at one thing. Everybody uses a running back by committee thing. You bring Blount in. Look what he did last year. He led the NFL not only in touchdowns, 13 of his 19 touchdowns came 5 yards within the goal line. When I get down in that red zone, I am not going to be sitting down there trying to throw that ball. I want to pound that ball in, and Blount is the thing that could do it for me.
Now, here's the fear. Okay, we could talk about running backs all day, but I don't think we could talk about the Giants draft without having to mention the offensive line. I mean, they averaged 3.5 yards per carry last year. That was the third worst in the league, only behind the Rams, only behind the Vikings. That's who we're talking about, you know, when we're trying to compare the Giants offensive line to the rest of the league. And, you know, I don't care if it's Blount, I don't care if it's Cook, Perkins, you know, if you don't have the guys up front, nothing's going to work. So they have to be pretty aggressive here.
Yeah, but if they're going to go offensive line, they're going to have to go to the Grand Ole Opry because what do we got out there? We have slim pickings. If Baltimore turns around and does not trade out in round one and they end up taking Cam Robinson, watch everybody looking for an offensive lineman to try to leapfrog the Giants, and we're going to have a short run on these offensive line guys. Bowles, to me, I exposed the emperor without his clothes on. Asiata made Bowles look good. I'm not concerned about the age. I am concerned about his development process and his lower body. You look at those legs on Bowles. They just don't look like somebody that could anchor for me. Me, I look at this draft that if I'm looking for an offensive lineman, go fish.
The thing about looking at a first-round offensive lineman, my case against it, all right, to play devil's advocate here, is I don't think any of these guys come in and start right away, you know. And I know, you know, we can talk about how the draft is not about, you know, 2017 only, but between Forrest Lamp, Cam Robinson, Ramchek, Bowles, I don't think any of these guys are immediately going to be a starter on this team. So then you start to ask yourself, is it worth using – a first round pick on someone that's going to be, you know, a sixth or seventh offensive lineman on your team year one. So, you know, hopefully you can get a solid value round two, round three. Some names that come to mind are Deion Dawkins from Temple, Dan Feeney from Indiana, Dorian Johnson from Pittsburgh. You know, these are guys that, you know, I'm not going to say they're day one starters, but I think long term upside, I think you can get something out of them more than what we're getting out of the current offensive line.
I'm just a little concerned what's going to shake out of the tree on the right side. I mean, playing Fluker at right tackle is probably going to be ill-advised. I'd much rather see him compete with Jerry in at the right guard spot. I think they definitely need a right tackle, but there's a sleeper up at Connecticut, guys. Don't forget about that kid from Denmark, Andreas Nappi. They've spent quite a few trips up there, and it wasn't to see the strong safety.
Mm.
Day three, I come up, you know, sixth, seventh round. Look at the size of the kid. Look at the way he moves. It's like watching Nate Soldier out on the football field.
Definitely an overlooked guy, absolutely.
So, Cy, are you willing to release your predictions for what the Giants are going to draft in the seven rounds?
I could try. You know, I know that as long as we go into this knowing that I have no idea what's going to happen this weekend, but I like to make, you know, the educated guesses and kind of see what transpires from there. I'm not huge into the mock draft world, but I do understand that it's just a big part of the process. And, you know, all it takes is one trade down, one trade up, then we're just back to the drawing board. But I can give you, you know, what I have for the Giants seven rounds.
All right, let's go.
So let's go. Maybe I'll just give the pick and we got Dave get some of his thoughts on him.
Okay.
All right, so first round, I think that the Giants are going to address maybe their second biggest offensive need in David Njoku, from tight end from Miami.
What do you say about that, Cy? I mean, Dave, I'm getting two Daves here.
with the way that Tennessee is trying to finagle in this draft, they, from what we're hearing coming out of there, they like the Miami kid better than they like the kid from Alabama. I think that he might not even get past Denver. If Denver doesn't go for an offensive lineman at number 20, I don't think that tight end will be there. But I'm not going to cry, because if I come up in round two and the kid from Ashland is there, I got the best tight end in this draft. If he's not there, you know, in round one kid that I got to look at, everybody's saying in round two, but, oh, my God, what electrifying he could do on the football field, and that's Ingram down at Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ingram might be in the picture at number 23 overall. That might be a little bit of a reach, but, I mean, how many guys at his size run a 4.4 with his
better
kind of
to draft field? A round too early than sit back and regret a round too late.
Right, yeah. But another thing about Giants and tight ends, I mean, Eli Manning since day one has been he loves to throw the tight end. You know, I mean, dating back even as soon as last year, Will Tye, you know, I don't think anyone's impressed by Will Tye's receiving abilities. You know, fourth on the team in targets the past 2 years. You know, Larry Donnell, third on the team in targets 3 years ago. You know, the tight end has been second, third, or fourth most targeted receiver during Eli Manning's career since 2004. Like, he likes to throw, so I think the Giants are going to be looking tight end early, in round one or round two.
He also likes a big target. I mean, that's part of the reason for bringing Marshall in. You know, you need to have a couple of tall guys out there, because when Eli misses, he misses high.
Absolutely.
And let me let me toss my wild card into this thing because he'll probably still be out there in round four. Yes, he will never be able to block, not even a little kid in kindergarten, but Bucky Hodges, you could use him as flanker. You could groom him behind Marshall. You could play him at tight end in passing situations. I mean, look what the kid does. He's 6'6", 257 pounds, runs a 4.5 and change, 39-inch vertical. I like a kid with hops like that, especially when Eli starts getting into those long tosses.
Absolutely.
All right, so you're looking offense in the first round. It sounds like, Cy, and you know we discussed a variety of options there. So what are we looking at in round two?
I think we're looking defensive end or some sort of edge rushing presence. DeMarcus Walker, since day one, since September, I've thought he's kind of been like a giant in the making, kind of almost like a slightly smaller version, Justin Tuck, but same kind of player, just can play inside, outside. He's a matchup nightmare for no matter who he's matched up against.
Dave, what's your thoughts about this?
I agree with it, but I look at the unknown element, the speed merchants out there in three. I'll throw right at you. You know my affection towards Jordan Willis. I think Jordan Willis could be the next Jeff Allen out there. Terrell Basham up at Ohio University is getting a lot of play. I got a couple of teams at the tail end of the draft telling me that they're thinking that Dallas might end up taking Derek Rivers from Youngstown at the end of round one. These are three guys, if they're sitting in the board in round two, outstanding edge rushers. And all three of them, I feel, could also drop back and play linebacker. Maybe not Basham as much as Willis and Rivers, but, boy, there's some talent out there that is, how can I put it, not getting the media attention like the other guys.
So is it that you think we're going to dodge the cornerback issue?
Well, here's the whole thing. I mean, most of the teams know right now the wild card, the cornerback issue, is probably going to be in round three. And the next Richard Sherman is sitting there up in Utah, and that's Brian Allen. 6'3", 220, a 30 bench, 4.52 speeder in the 40. I could use him at the boundary. I could use him in the slot. I could use him playing safety, depending on my defensive scheme.
And what's your round three call there, Cy?
I think we're looking defensive tackle at this point. You know, this is where we get what we discussed earlier to start talking about some of these role players inside. I have two names, you know, whether David thinks they're going to be available or not, I'm not sure. But Montrevious Adams from Auburn, light switched on for him this year, took in some coaching, could have had a great year, and Dalvin Tomlinson from Alabama, kind of a guy that I think got overlooked in that Alabama defense all year.
Well, the way I look at it, with all of their trips down to Albany State, a city that doesn't even have a Walgreens, we know they weren't down there to get their medication filled. So unless some scout is a nut, I think that when we come up in day three, we could find probably a great value out there in Grover Stewart. I mean, the kid's 6'4", 347 pounds, 5'1", 4", and a 40. I mean, him and Big Snacks together, my biggest concern is who's going to get to the dining room table before they get out onto the training field.
All right, Dave, you're always good for a laugh here. All right, Cy, so let's move into round four. What do you got for us?
This is a spot where I could see, you know, we already talked about these slim pickings at along the offensive line from start to finish, really. But I think at some point you have to address it, you know, whether you're looking for a backup or a guy that can maybe replace Flowers down the road. An offensive lineman I'm higher on than what I see out there is Connor McDermott, offensive tackle, UCLA, former big-time high school basketball player, got a lot of experience at UCLA, got beat up by Myles Garrett bad in the beginning of the season. But as the year went on, I felt like he was one of the more consistent tackles in this class, and I think he's got a lot of tools that you need to work with, just needs to refine some of the technique, and most importantly, he just needs to get stronger. You know, he's kind of like the opposite of what we saw Flowers coming out of college. He's got a lot of good footwork, good balance, good hands, just this isn't strong enough yet.
UCLA has a great program. Dave, what do you think about this guy?
I like Connor McDermott. I also like the kid that I have actually ranked alongside of him, the kid down at Pittsburgh, a four-year starter at left tackle, Adam Bisnawati. This is a guy, he's a little bit stronger than McDermott. McDermott is a little bit faster, but both of these guys come with pedigree. There's a lot of starting experience with both of them. Also, another kid that I like is the kid down at Vanderbilt, tall kid, 6'7", Will Holden. This is a kid that I know I could play at left tackle. He's done it. And if we're going to go small college in round three, is sitting out there with the kid from Bucknell, Julian Davenport. There's a lot of talent out there. I'm just hoping that they end up finding a left tackle type because there's a lot of tackles in this draft that are going to end up moving inside.
Yep.
There's definitely been a lot of talk about Julian Davenport.
Yeah, he was one of the winners at the when he got measured. I think he had something crazy, 36-inch arms. You know, he's got a frame that's easily going to add more weight over the years. Definitely an upside guy.
Let me tell you one guy. I am praying to God that they end up bringing in a Smarty Pants later on in the draft. I think probably the best value of the offensive tackle position is resting down at Harvard, and that's this kid Max Rich. Outstanding guy. Last year, 171 knockdown blocks in 11 games.
Wow.
All right, we'll move on to round five. What do you got for us in round five, Si?
Linebacker that was not invited to the combine. I'm still trying to figure out why. From Oklahoma, Jordan Evans, probably one of the best athletes at the position. And we're not talking about a small guy. We're talking, you know, former running back in high school, and he kind of plays the game like that. Maybe a little reckless, maybe a little struggles with taking on blocks a little bit. But, you know, we're talking about a guy 6'2", 235 pounds, and can cover probably better than any current Giants linebacker. And a note about the linebackers, the Giants, right? They have B.J. Goodson. I think he's going to get a shot at Mike this year. We'll see. But between J.T. Thomas, Keenan Robinson, Jonathan Casillas, and who am I missing? Devon Kennard. All right, these guys are all free agents next year. So the long-term stability of that position, and there's almost nothing there. So I do think they're going to attack a linebacker at some point day three. Jordan Evans fits the scheme and presents great value round five.
And your thoughts, Dave?
Me, I'm looking round five, round six. I might find a JPP clone out there with a guy that's got hair as long as me, and he's called Samson, and Delilah's not going to cut it. Book him. Cam's hair. Hey, I'm from Brooklyn. I mispronounce everybody. Recently worked him out. He ran a 4.46 for me, put up the whites 32 times. Problem with this kid is, as great as he is getting to the quarterback, he has no conception of what he's doing on the field. Reminds me of Vince Williams down in Pittsburgh, a guy that plays with his hair on fire. A couple other guys that I really like that I think we could steal in the third day of the draft is Devontae Fields out of Louisville. Okay, he does come with some track record off the field, but he's been keeping his nose clean for the last couple of years. And I do agree with Si, Jordan Evans, that is a keeper. This is a guy that could come in and start right away. And I also like the kid from Wisconsin, Vince Beagle. He could play inside, he could play strong, he could also play the weak. Hopefully they go a little earlier for a linebacker, because I think the most complete guy for a New York Giants system right now, he could probably get him round three, and that's the kid out of Alabama, Ryan Anderson.
Another thing about the linebacker position, all right, the Giants, Jerry Reese has been trying to find this 4-3 outside linebacker that can put his hand in the dirt on passing downs. He's been trying to find it since 2000. I mean, remember, they moved Mathias Chiwanuka from defensive end to outside linebacker back in 2007 and 2012. They drafted Clint Sims in 2009. He was a 3-4 outside linebacker at Virginia. That experiment never worked out. They tried to sign O'Brien Schofield back in 2014, failed the physical. That never transpired. They were really hot on Leonard Floyd last year for this exact reason. And, you know, Devon Kennard was kind of sort of a role player like that at USC, played a bunch of different positions. But they've been trying to find this linebacker that can play defensive end on pass and downs. And I think they might be onto something with these, you know, Devontae Fields. And even early in the draft, if you want to talk about rounds one and two between Watt, Bowser, Reddick, you know, all these guys, it's a role that they've been trying to find to fill for a long time. They haven't quite been able to find that guy.
And if they find it, it might be down at Missouri State. There is an unknown talent down there that they simply love. The kid's name is Dylan Cole. Okay, he's a little bit on the short side, 5'11" and a change, but before 5'4" speed and 100 tackles in each of his last three seasons, this kid is a sticker. The good thing I like about him, he reminds me a lot of Zach Thomas. I think if somebody moves him into inside linebacker, they may have the best pass defender of the middle linebackers within a few years.
All right, let's move to round six there, Si. What do you got?
Well, another spot, Reese, you know, if you want to look at trends and what Jerry Reese has done since he's been calling the shots, he's always looking for these late-round picks. He looks for long defensive backs that can eventually develop. And I think a guy that is flying under the radar because he spent most of 2016 hurt towards ACL early in the year should be ready by training camp this season. Jeremy Clark, cornerback from Michigan, he's probably one of the biggest, fastest corners in this class. Little raw, But that's, I mean, that's what you're getting in round six. You know, you're looking for a guy that, that has tools that you can hope to coach up and develop, and that's where I think you're going to get him.
Well, I'll tell you, I think there's some tough guys coming out of that Michigan program. When I look at some of the tape, some of those Michigan games, some big guys, they're not afraid to take hits, and they're really a very tough program. What do you think about this guy, Dave?
Oh, I liked him. I liked him before he got hurt. I thought this kid would have been a solid second-round draft pick. And if you look at the cornerbacks that are out there, there are very few you're going to find pushing over 200 pounds. Another kid that I hear that they like in the mid-rounds is a speedster, but more as a slot cornerback, and that's Jalen Myrick out of Minnesota. They didn't realize till we started breaking down film, but he led the NCAA in the last 2 years, only allowed 21.72% of the passes targeted into his area to be completed. No other cornerback in college football can match that number.
And so finally, we come to round seven, Cy. And I know you're high on this guy for round seven, who I love. Why don't you tell us about him?
Well, I'm sticking with Michigan here. And I do think the Giants are going to add a running back. I don't think they're going to feel too urgent.
I love it. Thank you so much, Cy, man. I was hoping you would get to him. Go ahead.
Devion Smith. Running back from Michigan, I think you know what you're getting with him. You know, I'm not going to say this guy's give him 25 carries a game type back, but if I'm taking a running back that I want to contribute this year, I'm not thinking project. I'm thinking a guy that I know he's going to help out right away, and I don't care what scheme you put him into, Devion Smith is going to be a quality short yardage back. You know, again, we could talk about the offensive line needing to be there, but we're talking about a guy that runs through his first arm tackle almost every time he gets the ball. I think he showed a lot of people at the Senior Bowl that he's a better receiver than what he was given credit for at Michigan. And I think this is one of the best blocking running backs in the NFL. And that is something that NFL coaches want out of guys, out of rookies, that a lot of them just don't block in college. And I think you know what you're getting. You know, he's never going to be a star, but I think Devion Smith could probably be the short yardage back this year. And to get a guy that's going to contribute that much in the seventh round is a big win.
Dave, what are your thoughts about Devion Smith?
What I love about this kid, he's a lunch pail type. And if you're not going to sign Blunt, you better bring in a big back. And you're not going to find a better big back than him. You might look at James Conner, but I think that James Conner's medical issue might scare a few teams. But with Smith, yes, you bring Smith into this thing. And I agree with Cy, no one picks up the blitz better than Smith does. You look at the offensive line with Michigan. They struggled last year with that offensive line. What protected that quarterback was that tailback being able to pick up those guys shooting through the gaps.
I'll tell you something. When I watch Michigan film and I see this guy on the goal line, you got to be impressed with him because he's moving players away and he's going through that line like a hammer.
73% of his yardage came after initial contact. 55% of his runs last year, it took multiple defenders to take him down. I mean, this you watch this kid, there's a cloud of dust behind him, and usually on most of his plays, especially on his inside runs, some defenders go into the sidelines with an injury.
He runs angry. I mean, that's what you want out of a short yardage guy. You know, I love Brandon Jacobs as much as anyone. But,
well, you know what they say with guys like him, Cy, you know, coach, if you want me to get you 4 yards, I'll get you 2.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. You get exactly what you want at a Smith, but he's not going to give you much more. You know, like if we can remember what Brandon Jacobs, you know, his last couple of years, I mean, he got nicked up, but, you know, what made him, you know, ineffective was just, you know, he's just a little too slow to the line. You know, once he got going, he could run over anyone. That was 265 pounds, so of course he'd run over guys. You know, Devion Smith, he's at his full speed the second he gets the ball. Sometimes he doesn't know where he's going, but, you know, he creates yards by himself, and I think that's the kind of guy you want in short yardage situations.
Well, I know one thing about Smith, though, is he has very little shake out there on the football field. He's not going to be great on outside runs, and I know he doesn't have shake because I was at the Michigan banquet, and I saw him doing the white man's dance.
Yeah, I the tape on him is he's a straight line runner and he's a bull. I mean that's what I see.
Yeah. Violence puts a defensive player on the sidelines, and that's what I want from my running back. Hurt the other guy.
Yep. So, Dave, what should our readers expect from Crazy Day One this year?
I am seeing that if last year's was probably one of the fastest first rounds ever, this one over here, don't go to the bathroom unless you got the hopper in your hands. It's going to be a buku amount of trades. The big critical thing right now is San Francisco might be outplaying their hand, because now all of a sudden Cleveland is turning their attention to the number five pick with Tennessee, thinking that all they have to do is leapfrog the Jets in order to get their quarterback. Good luck, buddy. Arizona, we know where they're going. They're going for a passer. The problem is, which one are they going to take? Is it going to be Watson or is it going to be Mahomes? If Mahomes passes by, I don't think Bill O'Brien will let him go past the first round, even though they're saying that they're quote-unquote satisfied with Savage as their quarterback. I think that once Baltimore acts, if they stay at 16 to take Cam Robinson, watch teams leapfrog to try to get their hands on Ramczyk and Bowles and Lamp. I think Lamp doesn't get past Miami from what I'm hearing down there unless a defensive end ends up sliding into their lap like a Charles Harris. San Fran, if they stay where they are, everybody's saying Solomon Thomas. I'm saying no, they're going to go ahead and volunteer and take a guy from Tennessee, and that will be Derek Barnett at number two. Jamal Adams, as far as I'm concerned, is the best player in this draft. Now I'm hearing Chicago might end up going and taking Solomon Thomas. Go ahead, buddy. I'll have the other rival team in New York end up with the best safety and the best player in this draft by taking the LSU star.
Hmm. So I know you've been giving this some thought, Si. How aggressive should the Giants be to trade up should a top guy fall?
I mean, again, we're talking about who specifically would drop, but I'm all for trading up. You know, everyone's saying trade down, extra pick. And truth be told, you know, a lot of these extra picks that you acquire in the third round, the fourth round, the fifth round, if you want to play the odds game, a lot of these guys aren't in the league 3-4 years from now. If you find a guy, and, you know, we're talking, this draft is as great as it's ever been. We have no idea what's going to happen. You could easily see a talent that you have really high on your board drop into those low teens, mid-teens, and I'm all for trading up. If you want to give up your first and second to try and grab someone like, you know, Hassan Reddick if he drops, or even Malik Hooker, you know, if there's teams that just don't want to look at a safety that only started for a year, it's got a little bit of shoulder issue, tackling issues, you know, if you're really, you know, hell-bent on a guy that's going to do well and if you have to give up a second-round pick to go get him, I'd say be aggressive and go get it.
And
I think the big surprise on draft day might end up being O.J. Howard doing a slide. I mean, if he gets past Tennessee with the picks over there, and I'm sitting and he's on the board when Tampa Bay comes up, I'm the Giants, and I'm saying, you know what? Denver's probably going to end up grabbing this guy. Maybe Let me leapfrog. Let me toss in maybe a 3 or maybe a 4 to entice Tampa Bay because I'm only moving up 5 spots. Tampa Bay knows what they want to do. They want to go defense over here. They feel that the 3 running backs are going to be gone off the board. Howard could be in play for the Giants, but then, like I said on that first podcast we did, I gave him my Peggy Lee Award. Is that all there is? Is that all there is? That's what I see when I watch film.
And we one guy we haven't talked about that I know both of you are kind of interested in that might be part of this type of scenario was Forrest Lamp.
That was till I spoke with the people down at South Beach. They're pretty intent on improving that offensive line. Tunsil's moving out the left tackle, and they need a left guard, and they have this kid so much penciled in down there that I think they're starting to use a Sharpie with his name on the board.
I
the Giants fans didn't agree with me, and I don't think the Giants front office was too much enamored with him, but I felt Lamp with his short arms was much better than those 3 long on tackles that were rated ahead of him. A lot of people are saying that he's going to play God. Some are saying that he's going to move into center in the NFL, but what I say is he's probably the most NFL-ready offensive lineman in this draft, and that's not saying much.
No, I respect your opinion. I just have a hard time with all the top offensive line prospects this year. None of them really excites me at all. If the Giants rate them highly, I would learn to live with them. But I'm just not interested in seeing another Eric Flowers join the lineup.
Yeah, but when I got a guy averaging 16 knockdowns a game, when I got a guy in 3 years that's only given up 2 pressures and a half a sack at left tackle and playing for a mediocre team like Western Kentucky, it makes me take notice.
The thing about Forrest Lamp, right, he had the best game of any lineman I watched all year against Alabama. You know, he controlled Jonathan Allen, who's consensus top 10 player in this draft, probably even a top 5 player in this draft. He controlled Jonathan Allen start to finish in that game. So while Lamb didn't really see top level competition all year, as if he would have, you know, if he was in the ACC, Big Ten, SEC, when he got his shot against Alabama, he performed admirably. And I think that's going to be something that, you know, you could always point to and say, hey, he might not be tackle, he might not be a guard, whatever. The guy played really well against top competition this year, and that's a big deal for me.
I see if they go for Lamp in this draft that Jerry stood to the old adage and went the best available athlete. But I think that with their needs in other places, you can't get by with using that line that I'm going for the best available guy. You got to fill those needs, and you got to fill them quickly, because this is not a draft where you're going to find much talent.
Yeah.
So speaking about falling candidates, Dave, what's your feeling about the recent draft scandals that have been surfacing?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Don't do mock drafts, guys, because what you wake up to see on Wednesday is going to be totally different by Thursday, and that's what goes down. I mean, you look at the Foster situation. Everybody was saying, oh, he's definitely a top 10 pick, more than likely to Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati, which I find totally ironic considering they have Pac-Man Jones and Vontaze Burfict there, they're saying that his off-field issues concern me. Oh, really? Do you see the other two criminals you got on your team? I think he's going to end up either sliding more likely down to Washington. Now, Washington thinks that Detroit might end up taking him, and if they do that, they say, thank you, ma'am, and they pop on Hassan Reddick. So what's going to happen right now is a domino effect. Peppers, to me, was no more than, how could I put it, a nice day three lookup, because outside of Tennessee, outside of Pittsburgh, I don't think he fits a defensive scheme for what he's going to have to learn how to play. Now, the Conley situation, that's his freaking agent's fault. Part of my French on this, because here's what happened. As soon as that kid got busted, I'm standing on the police headquarters thing with a Q-tip in my hand and saying, here's my DNA. You go ahead and you do your stuff. By being quiet right now, this kid's going to win the Lewis Oliver Award. And look what happened to Oliver years ago when his agent shut up over those drug issues. Go back and look at what happened with Tunsil last year. Go back and look at what happened with Collins when that information came out. His agent should have been proactive. No, what they did is, oh, well, he didn't do it, but everybody's playing mum and chants over there.
Dave, when did the team start planning for the next year's draft?
Oh, man, I'm 2 months into my season, buddy. Our fiscal year for a scout starts March 1st. After the combines, to us, it's basically goodbye. We're out on spring drills. And a lot of people say, well, you know, why would you put an importance in spring drills? Why? Because all of a sudden, those seniors that are graduating or the juniors that are left have to be replaced. I want to see their replacements. Okay, in spring, you're learning what's doing. When I show back in August, I want to see how that kid applied himself. Because that tells me what I got forecast for that season. Spring drills is probably the most critical time for me because it's my time to start putting my book together. And let me tell you, brother, the 2018 class right now, I would say the 2017 class is a comic book edition of what next year's War and Peace novel is going to look like.
All right. Well, that's very exciting. And Cy, when do you start looking at the prospects for the following year?
Well, you know, I don't think I go into it as deep as Dave does, like a true professional like himself. I mean, but I have started already. And kind of what I do to help myself out, I started doing this a couple of years ago, is that while I'm scouting these players, if someone jumps off the screen to me that's a freshman or sophomore, I'll start putting some notes down together just so I can kind of be as prepared as possible. But the real work for me starts in June, July. You know, I get all the seniors onto a list, and I start weeding some guys out that I don't think are going to be players. But basically, June and July and August, they're just get as much information on these guys as possible. You know, if I have time, I'll go back and look at some game notes or some tape from last year. But it's, you know, the June, July, August are kind of just like information gathering mode for me, and then it really starts to pick up late August, early September.
If the 2018 class was replacing the 2017 class, we'd be going 1-2-3 a quarterback. Sam Donald,
yep.
Josh Allen, and a guy that some people might disagree with me, but he's the most electrifying player in college football, Mr. Jackson at Louisville.
Mm-hmm. Closest thing to Mike Vick I think we've ever seen coming out of college.
And the thing is, off the field, man, he is no Mike Vick.
Yeah.
So What do you think is up next for our podcast here? This is number two, and, you know, we've been focusing around the draft. I know that Dave's been talking about a bunch of stuff. He has a list of things to do that is would choke a horse, in my opinion. But what do you think is up next for us?
I say we don't wait till after the draft. I say we go out each and every night after the draft, discuss what the Giants did on day one and the surrounding picture on that day, day two what they did, day three what they did, and then Monday we could follow up with the free agents that they signed while everybody was tucked in bed that night.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, I'll hook up with you guys after the broadcast, and we'll arrange that. I want to thank you both for joining us, Dave and Cy 56, and you provided us with some real entertainment today, and we really thank you for all your contributions to BBI. You both add real value to our website, and it's really gratifying that you share and help fuel our passion for the New York Giants. And thanks to all our listeners for joining us. We appreciate you, and we like to get your feedback. And on behalf of Dave and Cy and Eric Kennedy, this is Mike Siegel from BBI signing off until our next broadcast.